This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Dragnet this week. We'll hear The Big Note from April 13th, 1954. After that, it's Casey, crime photographer, and Death of a Stranger, his story from August 11th, 1949.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet is brought to you by Chesterfield, made by Liggett and Myers, first major tobacco company to bring you a complete line of quality cigarettes.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a juvenile detail. You get a report of drug addiction within a group of teenagers. You don't know if the information is true. Your job, check it out. Meet Peter Lind Hayes and Mary Healy, America's favorite husband and wife comedy team. They are typical of smokers everywhere who are saying, "Chesterfield's for me." Mary says,
"I've smoked regular-sized Chesterfields for about 7 years. Guess that ought to prove how I feel about Chesterfield's taste and mildness."
Peter says, "Chesterfield's for me, too."
"Far as I'm concerned, King is the only size. And like Mary says, Chesterfield is the only cigarette."
"Either way you like them, I'll bet you'll find Chesterfield is best for you."
Yes, smoke America's most popular two-way cigarette. Regular and king-size Chesterfield. For the taste you want, the mildness you want, join the thousands now changing to Chesterfield. Always say, "Chesterfield's for me."
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, February 10th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of juvenile detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Powers. My name's Friday. I was on my way into the office, and it was 8:01 a.m. when I got to Georgia Street Juvenile Squad Room. Hi, Frank.
Well?
Hmm?
Well, what do you think?
About what?
Ruth, what do you think?
Well, she's nice, sure.
Was that all you got to say?
Well, what do you want me to say?
Did you like her?
She's a nice girl, yeah.
You got another date with her?
No, I told her I'd call her sometime.
You said you'd call her, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say when?
No, I just said sometime.
Sometime. Well, Faye's not going to like it.
Why?
She's just not, Joe. She's not sure we had it this time.
Look, Frank, I think it's real nice of you and Faye to be concerned. I don't think that I don't appreciate it, but when you asked me over last night, I figured we're just going to have dinner and sit around and talk. I didn't know anything about this girl going to be there. Don't you think you should have told me? Let me know.
Joe, you like girls, don't you?
Well, of course I like girls.
Well, we couldn't have done that, you know. We'd louse the whole thing up if we'd told you ahead of time. We just wanted you to meet her. Get the full effect. Bang, like that.
I got the full effect.
Well, we tried to set it all up for you. She is pretty, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so.
Blue eyes, red hair. I think she's real pretty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Faye and me had a whole evening planned, right from the time you two met.
I kind of got that idea.
What do you mean?
Well, you're about as subtle as a water buffalo.
Now, you tell me where we were obvious. Go ahead, tell me.
Well, all right. First off, the music. That album or records of yours there. What's it called? Love Music or whatever it was?
Mood for Lovers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I bought them special.
Yeah. And the flowers on the table?
Well, you gotta have flowers. You gotta have something for the center of the table.
You must have gone a long way for those. Orange blossoms, you had to have those.
Well, Faye's not gonna like it.
Well, I'm very sorry about that, Frank.
Oh, we're just trying to show you the advantages of getting married.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you and Faye trying, but let me do it my way. Huh? Any mail this morning?
Huh?
Any mail?
Yeah, Skipper put a note in your box.
Okay. Tickets for the police show.
You got to sell tickets, huh?
Yeah, so do you. Here's your book.
You're not mad, are you, Joe?
No, man, it's just that all the time people are trying to be helpful, you know. Well, I kind of hate to say it behind her back. I say I hate to say it behind her back, but it was Faye's idea. I didn't have any part in it.
Yeah.
Faye's idea. You sure you're not sore, huh?
No, I told you, man.
Sure?
I'm sure, Frank, yeah. Oh, Ruth.
What?
Look, it wasn't the fact that she was a redhead, was it?
Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah, Skipper says to run this down.
Thanks, Jim. What do you got?
Take a look at this.
Huh? Dear sir, I have some information for you about a big dope ring. It's important I talk to you. I'll meet you at the streetcar stop at 7th and Broadway on the east side after 3:45 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday. That's today, huh?
Yeah. Read the rest of it.
I can't tell you my name now, but I'll be wearing a green skirt and a plaid sweater. I'll be standing right by the streetcar stop.
What do you think?
I don't know. No signature. You got anything in the envelope?
No. It's postmarked L.A., addressed to juvenile division. No way of telling where it came from.
Think it's from a crank?
Well, there's one place we can find out.
Yeah.
7th and Broadway. The fact that the note had been addressed to juvenile division instead of narcotics detail indicated that the person who wrote it had some knowledge of the workings of the police department. It also led us to believe that the writer was a juvenile. We checked again with Captain Powers on the letter, and it was decided that we'd make the meet that afternoon. Frank and I spent the rest of the morning going over reports on a case that we just finished, and at 3:15 p.m. we left the office. Frank stopped the car at 8th and Broadway for a traffic signal, and I got out and walked the remaining block. There was no one at the streetcar stop dressed in a green skirt and a plaid sweater. While Frank circled the block, I waited. 3:40 p.m., still no sign. At 3:52, a woman of about 23 got off a streetcar and waited on the corner. She was wearing a dark green suit with a plaid blouse. I waited for some indication that she might be the person we were waiting for, but she gave none. Finally, she turned, walked across the street, and disappeared into the crowd. 4 o'clock, 4:15, still no sign of a letter writer. 4:30, 4:45. Frank pulled into a loading zone near the corner, and I went over to talk to him.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. She's an hour late now.
Well, that note must have been from a crank.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, come on, get in. We better go back to the office.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute, Joe.
What?
Right there, across the street.
Oh, yeah. Matches the description.
Must be her.
Well, she's looking this way. I'll check it. She looked about 15. Brown hair and a thin, young face. She was carrying an armful of school books. She paused in the corner and watched me. I walked up to her and told her I was a police officer. She nodded and then walked out to the safety zone and climbed onto a waiting streetcar. I followed her. She walked to the back of the car and took a seat. I sat down next to her. I could see Frank following us in our car. We rode 3 blocks before she spoke.
I'm sorry I was late.
It's all right.
I usually try to be on time, maybe even a little early. That's the way it should be, don't you think?
Well, what was it you wanted to talk about, miss?
I got hung up at school. Couldn't get away when I thought I would.
Yeah.
That's the reason I'm late.
Well, you said something in the note about a narcotics ring.
How much am I going to get involved in this?
What do you mean?
How deep am I going to get? I don't want any trouble myself. I'm doing this to help somebody. But I don't want to get mixed up in it myself.
Well, maybe you better tell me what it's all about first, huh? We can decide the rest of it later.
That's the way it has to be.
Well, you called us, remember?
Yeah, I guess so.
What's your name?
Edna.
Your last name?
Well, that isn't going to help any. You don't need it.
How old are you?
15.
All right, what about this dope ring?
I want to tell you about it. A friend of mine is in pretty deep. I think she's hooked bad. I want to help her.
What's your friend's name?
You have to have that?
Well, we're not going to be able to do very much without it, are we?
Catherine. I can't give you her last name. I can't.
How old is she?
15.
All right, now what makes you think she's using narcotics?
I just know, that's all.
Well, that's a pretty serious charge. You must have some reason for saying it.
I've got a reason. I've got good reasons. You think I'd go to the cops if I didn't have? You think that?
What kind of narcotics do you think she's using?
Heroin.
You know that for sure, do you?
Yeah, I've seen her take a fix.
Where?
Hmm?
Where'd she take the fix?
I've seen her do it in her room at home. A place near school up at Lewis Apartments.
Lewis?
Lewis Conklin. He got Catherine hooked. He's the one I want to see you get.
How old's he?
Oh, I don't know. I think around 20, 21.
Where'd you meet him?
Down at Balboa last summer. Catherine and me went down for a week. We met them then, Lewis and Vince.
You know this Vince's last name?
I think it's Beal.
B-E-A-L?
I guess so.
Now, these two boys, are they supplying Catherine with the heroin?
Yeah, they got it for her.
How'd you happen to meet them?
First day we were down at Balboa, we went down to the beach. We saw them then. We didn't talk to them right off, not the first day.
Uh-huh.
The next day, they came over to where we were and laid down on the beach. They had a portable radio, and they were playing it loud. They were playing it real loud.
Yeah.
Well, Lewis asked us if they had the radio on too loud, and we said no. Then we got to talking.
All right, go ahead.
We found out that they knew a lot of the kids that go to our school, so we talked about them. We talked and listened to the radio.
Mm-hmm. Were either your or Catherine's parents with you?
No. Catherine's father's got a friend who lives at Balboa all the time. We were staying with her.
All right, go ahead.
After we knew him a week, one night, they suggested that we go for a ride down the coast toward San Diego.
Yeah.
They'd never given us any trouble, so Catherine and me talked it over and decided to go. They'd never gotten fresh or anything, so we thought it'd be all right.
Mm-hmm.
We drove down the beach, and then we stopped. The boys had some beer in the car, and we drank some of it, just a little. We didn't think it would hurt, just a little.
All right.
I guess we drank more than we thought, because we both got a little drunk. First time I ever got drunk. All I wanted to do was go home and go to sleep. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't feel good. I remember that. I didn't feel good.
Go ahead.
I got out of the car, and I walked around for a while. After I walked, I felt better, and I went back to the car. Catherine and the two boys were smoking. I could smell it when I got in the car. Real sweet. Sickening.
Marijuana?
Yeah. Vince asked me if I wanted some. I told him I didn't, and they all laughed again. Said I was just a little kid, called me chicken. So I did.
You smoked the marijuana, did you?
Yeah, but not very much. Got sick again, and I threw the stick away. That made Vince sore because I hadn't smoked very much. He got out of the car and found what was left of the cigarette and put it in a box he had. Then he got in the car, and the three of them all drank some more of the beer and smoked the rest of the marijuana. They were all laughing and yelling.
Catherine was smoking, too?
Yes, she was having a great time, laughing it up. Seemed like everything that happened was just about the funniest thing she ever heard. They were all laughing and telling me what a square I was. Finally, I couldn't stand it anymore. So I said if they wouldn't take me home, I'd walk.
What'd they say to that?
Told me to go ahead. Said I was a drag anyway, and they'd be glad to get rid of me.
You left then?
Yeah. I tried to get Catherine to go with me. She said she was having too good a time and she wasn't leaving. She told me to go home and to expect her when she walked in.
Yeah.
So I left. Got out of the car and walked up the highway. Was going to catch a ride back to town. Pretty scared, but I wanted to get back. I didn't feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
I waited for the car, but the ones that went by wouldn't stop. Then Vince and Lewis and Catherine came by. They told me to get into the car, and we drove home. I had to wait out in front with Catherine until she sobered up. Said she was too drunk to go into the house.
What time did you get home?
Oh, it must have been 3 or 3:30.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Vince and Lewis again?
Well, I didn't, but Catherine did. Every night we were there, she went out with them. I didn't want to have anything more to do with them. She told me if I said anything to the people we were staying with, she'd cause me a lot of trouble. I like Catherine. She's my best friend. I didn't want to see her get into any trouble. Thought when we left Balboa, she'd quit seeing the fellas. That's what I thought. She'd stop seeing them.
Did she?
No. When school started again, she was still going with Lewis. I'd see her around the school, but she wouldn't have anything to do with me. Said I was a cube. Talking all the time about how she didn't know they grew corners like me anymore.
How'd you find out she was on heroin?
One day I saw her take a pop. She was at her house, and I came over to talk to her. She was pretty sick, and she went into her room. I went in after her to see if I could help, and I saw her taking a fix. After that, I didn't see much of her. I guess she didn't want me around, knowing she was hooked.
When was all this?
About 2 months ago. I've seen her a couple of times since. She looks real bad.
Her parents know anything about the narcotics?
I don't know. There's just her father. I don't think he cares much. If he does, he's not doing anything about it. I'm just telling you all this so you'll get Lewis and Vince. They're the ones who started her. They're seeing that she gets the H.
You know where we can find them?
Yeah. Lewis has a little apartment over in the Westlake area.
You know the address?
No, but I can show you where it is.
All right.
I just want to see you get them. Get them good.
Mm-hmm.
She was my best friend. Now she won't have anything to do with me. Nothing.
Well, maybe we can straighten it out.
What do you want to do now?
Well, first we better get off this streetcar.
Hmm?
End of the line. Edna and I got off the streetcar and Frank picked us up. We stopped at a drugstore and put in a call to the office requesting that a policewoman be sent out to take the girl into custody. 10 minutes later, Officer Irene Gardner arrived and the four of us drove over to the Westlake area. The young girl pointed out the building where she told us that Vince Beale and Lewis Conklin lived. She gave us a description of the two suspects, and finally, after Miss Gardner had talked to her, she also gave us the full name of her friend, Catherine Pilgrim. We checked at the building and found that the two suspects occupied apartment 4G. Frank and I talked to the manager of the place, but she told us that the pair weren't in and that she didn't know when they'd be back. We returned to the car and told Officer Gardner to take Edna to George Street Juvenile and hold her until we could get there. After that, Frank called the office and ran the names Vincent Beale and Lewis Conklin through R&I. They both had misdemeanor records in California, and Beale had served time in the county jail for possession of narcotics. We called Captain Powers and told him what had happened, and then we returned to the apartment and set up a surveillance. At 7:25 p.m., we heard someone coming down the hall.
Don't worry about a thing, honey. It's all going to be all right.
I'm sick, Vince. Real sick.
I know. I'll make a call, get you fixed up. Just calm down.
All right, hold it right there, police officers.
Hey, what are you doing in here? You got no right to break in like this. What's this all about?
I gotta go, Vince. I got it.
Hold it out, Miss Pilgrim.
How do you know who I am? What are you gonna do?
Don't say anything, Kathy. Don't tell him nothing.
Turn around, Beale.
What for? What are you shoving me around?
Turn around.
Here, turn around. I'll take him.
Stand
you
still.
Won't find nothing, cop. I'm clean.
Call it nothing. Where's Conklin?
You got to figure it so good, you tell me.
You better watch that mouth, kid. It's gonna get you into trouble.
You tell me all about it, cop. I got no problem. What are you taking us in on? What's the charge?
Violation of the Narcotics Act and contributing.
Yeah? You didn't find anything on me. You didn't find anything in the pad. You've been on a spike, cop, and you know it. Now, why don't you run along and I'll forget all about you being...
All right, let's go.
Where are you taking me?
Downtown.
To jail?
Juvenile hall.
You gonna call my father?
That's right.
Well, he won't tell you anything. He won't tell you a word.
Keep your mouth shut.
Why? I got nothing to hide. I'm not a hype. You ask my father.
Let me see your arms, Beale.
Huh?
Your sleeves. Roll them up. Come on, quick.
Here.
Where'd you get those marks?
You tell me.
Let me see your arms, Miss Pilgrim.
Not going to prove anything. Not a thing.
Let me see him.
Go ahead, honey. If you don't go along with them, they bring out the rubber hose.
Somebody messed with you a long time ago.
Yeah. Come on, Miss Pilgrim. Let me see your arms.
Well, all right. Here.
How about it, Jeff?
Take a look.
Yeah.
Fresh needle marks. We called Narcotics Division and asked them to come out and go over the room in an attempt to find a trace of narcotics. We put in a call to the office, and Irene Gardner came out and took the Pilgrim girl into custody. A stakeout was set up on the apartment to apprehend the other suspect, Lewis Conklin. Frank and I took Vince Beale to the office and questioned him for over an hour, but he failed to come up with his source of supply for the heroin. He was turned over to officers from Narcotics Detail and booked in at the main jail on suspicion of violation of the State Narcotic Act, a felony. A call had been put into the father of Catherine Pilgrim, and at 9:37 p.m. he arrived at the office.
Friday and Smith, where are they?
My name's Friday. What can I do for you?
I'm Robert Pilgrim. I want my daughter.
She's downstairs right now. A doctor's taking care of her.
What for?
Well, she's pretty sick, Mr. Pilgrim.
Sick? What's the matter? You've got no right to give her any kind of medication without my approval.
We couldn't reach you.
How hard did you try?
We called your home and your place of business. We got no answer. Our doctor thought it was best to give the girl something right away.
What's wrong with her? What are you doing to her?
Your daughter's a narcotic addict, Mr. Pilgrim.
That is a lie. Now, you get her up here right now. You hear me? You get on that phone and have her brought to this office right now. I'm taking her home.
Afraid we can't do that.
Who are you to tell me what's going to happen? I pay your salary, officer. Don't forget it. If you don't get on that phone and have my daughter brought up here right now, I'll make some calls and you'll be pounding the beat out in the toolies. I've got a lot of friends in this town.
And you've got a daughter who's hooked bad.
Has she told you that?
No, sir. But all the tests point that way. She's got needle marks all up and down her arm.
Well, you better get out and find a lawyer fast because I'm going to pull that tin badge right off you.
Is that so?
You bet it is. How do I get a line?
Dial 9.
Hello, Jack. This is Bob Pilgrim. I'm down at the police station. Yeah, Kathy's here. The cop says she's a hophead. I want you to tell him. Here, you talk to him.
Yes, sir. Who am I speaking with? Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, we did find hypodermic marks. I see. All right, sir. We'll be checking with you.
Now you'll get my daughter?
I'll have her sent right up. You want to come out in the hall, Frank?
Yeah.
Who'd he call?
It was a family doctor. We might not have a case here.
What's the matter?
Well, the doctor says he's been treating the girl for the past 6 months.
Yeah.
Been giving her hypodermic injections.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Tobacco has been one of man's basic pleasures for over 400 years. And the Chesterfields you smoke today are the best cigarettes ever made. And when I say that, I mean Chesterfield regular, I mean Chesterfield king size. Remember, this is the cigarette that's tested and approved by 30 years of scientific tobacco research. The cigarette that gives you proof of highest quality, low nicotine, the taste you want, the mildness you want. The cigarette that has an established good record with smokers, proven by test after test. Yes, friends, the Chesterfields you smoke today are the best cigarettes ever made. So join the thousands now changing to Chesterfield. Regular or king size, always say Chesterfield's for me.
With the doctor's statement, there was nothing we could do but release the girl to her father pending further investigation. The parents of the teenager who had written us the first letter came to the office, and she was released to them. At 11:40 p.m. that night, we got word that the other suspect had returned to the apartment and had been taken into custody. He was identified as Lewis Conklin, age 23. He was taken to the main jail and booked on the same charges as Vincent Beale. Their apartment was gone over, but no trace of narcotics was found. We questioned both suspects again, but they failed to cooperate with us. Frank and I checked out of the office and went home. The following morning, we drove out to see the doctor who had told me he was treating the Pilgrim girl. He said the girl was underweight and highly nervous and that he had been giving her vitamin injections. He went on to say that he'd stopped treating her 5 months previous at her father's request and that he had not seen the girl since then. February 11th, 10:24 a.m. We checked the car belonging to Vincent Beale. In the trunk, we found an expensive leather jacket. It looked too expensive to be worn by a man who had the reputation of never holding a job. We took the jacket over to the crime lab and had it checked. From a cleaning tag, we got the name of the cleaner who'd serviced the jacket. We contacted him, and he remembered the jacket as having been among several stolen from his store. With this information, we went back to the main jail and had the Conklin boy brought from his cell. He told us that the jacket belonged to Vincent Beale. He was brought into the interview room.
This leather jacket belong to you, Vince?
No, I never saw it before.
Conklin says it's yours.
I don't know. Maybe it is. What difference does it make?
Take a look. We want to know.
Yeah, it's mine.
Where'd you get it?
Where do you think I bought it? You know someplace you can get these without buying them?
Yeah, the same place you picked this one up.
Well, what's that supposed to mean?
You know a man named Ted Hartman?
Who?
Ted Hartman.
Ted Hartman. Never heard of him.
He knows you.
Maybe he's got a better memory than me.
Says you used to work for him.
Is that right?
Yeah. Now, how about it?
Maybe I did. I had a lot of jobs.
The cleaner says you worked for him a couple of weeks last December.
That's a long time ago.
Says this jacket was stolen from him.
Well, where do I fit?
He thinks you stole it.
He's crazy.
He's sure enough to make a complaint.
They'll laugh him out of court.
Conklin says it's yours.
I told you I bought it.
Conklin wants no part of a burglary rap.
What'd Conklin tell you?
Maybe we ought to get your side of it, huh?
What'd he tell you? I got a right to know. Look, he's going to make a beef like that on me. I got a right to know what he said.
He wants no part of it. He lays it all on you.
He's no good. I didn't figure for a guy I could trust. He did all right on the deal. Lute kept us both going.
What do you mean?
I thought he told you all about
it. Yeah, well, we want to hear it from you. A lot of times stories get all mixed up. Now we want to get it right.
Now, we knocked the place, but it was both of us. Lou was in on it all the way.
Go ahead.
We were scratching for H. We had it real bad. We needed some way out. I thought about the cleaning place. Figured we could score good. Well, we did all right. Took care of three of us for a long time.
You, Conklin, and the Pilgrim girl, is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
What were you shooting?
Me and Lou kept it down. The Pilgrim kid, she built up fast. She was juicing 5 caps a day. I should have listened to Lou. He kept telling me to drop her, leave her alone.
Yeah.
Wasn't anything between us. It was just for laughs. And then all of a sudden, she was hooked bad. We had to do something. We stole her jacket so we could keep her supplied. 5 caps a day. That's a lot of H. I tried to break her down. I tried to cut her habit. I did what I could. You can see that, can't you? I did everything I could.
How much was that? p.m. Frank and I, along with policewoman Irene Gardner, drove out to the Pilgrim residence. We went up to the front porch and rang the bell.
Yeah.
What do you want?
I'd like to see your daughter.
Now you get out of here. You get out of here right now. I've had enough of this shoving around from you. It's about time you learned your place.
It might be better if we came in.
Anything you got to say to me, you can say here. I don't want any cops in my house.
You want to get your daughter?
What for?
We're going to have to take her down to juvenile hall.
You guys just don't give up, do you? You want me to call my doctor again?
We talked to him this afternoon.
And you know the story. Now get out of here.
You want to get your daughter?
Look, I've got a gun inside. If you're still here when I come back, I'm going
to
use...
Now, you listen to me, mister. You've been acting like a big man long enough. You can play the part of the outraged parent with your family, but don't try it with us.
I'm not going to have you talk to me like that.
Not much you can do about it. We got the boys been supplying your daughter with narcotics. It's pretty clear that this home isn't the place for her.
She's a good girl.
We didn't say she wasn't.
Then why don't you leave her alone?
You know better than that.
Can do you boys some good downtown. I got a lot of friends.
You're going to need them.
All right, you want to make a case out of this? I'll fight you in every court in the country before I let you take my daughter away from me. Now, you just try it.
Your daughter's a drug addict. She's sick. She's got to be straightened out. She needs help.
Who are you to set yourself up as the jury?
You got a fine girl in there. She's got all the breaks except somebody who thinks enough of her to stand by her.
There isn't anything she wants she doesn't have.
What about the thing she needed? You let her run all over the town by herself. She gets in trouble and you won't take the time to care for her.
What about those two men who got her started? What are you going to do with them? They're guilty. If it hadn't been for those two, this never would have happened.
They'll be taken care of. You lay the blame any place you want, mister, but if you're honest, you'll keep it.
What's going to happen to her?
She'll be given medical attention. We'll do what we can.
I can afford to take care of her. I've got the money. I'll hire the best people. I want her to have the best.
Yeah.
She's mine. I'm her father. I've got the right to take care of her.
Yes, sir, that's right.
Hmm?
Why didn't you?
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 3rd, trial was held in Department 98, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Earlier, George Fenneman told you exactly why the Chesterfield you smoke today is the best cigarette ever made. And best for you. Now, the rest is up to you. Get a carton or two for yourself. Smoke them and you'll say, as we do, it's Chesterfield's for me.
Vincent Norman Beale and Lewis Shellman Conklin were tried and convicted of one count of burglary and additional charges of violation of the State Narcotic Act of felony and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. They received sentences as prescribed by law. Burglary is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years in the state prison. Catherine Noreen Pilgrim had a hearing in juvenile court and was made a ward of that court. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Joyce McCluskey, Harry Bartell, Carolyn Jones. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking. Watch an entirely different Dragnet case history each week on your local NBC television station. Please check your newspapers for the day and time. Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Filter, cigarette smokers. Here is headline news. Nationwide demand for L&M filters drops price. Now you save up to 4 cents a pack, 40 cents a carton. Now everyone can afford America's highest quality and best filter tip cigarette. Remember, only L&M's have the miracle filter tip containing alpha cellulose. You get much more flavor, much less nicotine. Buy L&M filters, the distinctive monogram cigarette, at the new low price. L&M filters.
Here, Crime and Peter Chambers following John Cameron Swayze on the NBC Radio Network.
Philip Morris presents Crime Photographer.
Oh, Philip, are you crazy? Oh,
It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to wake up fresh with no cigarette hangover. Yes, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today. Good evening. This is Ken Roberts, greeting you for Philip Morris, and inviting you to listen to another adventure of Casey, crime photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole, our adventure for tonight, Death of a Stranger. A little after 10 o'clock. Behind a massive desk in the richly appointed office that is a part of his home sits Robert Hyten, whose lucrative business is the buying and selling of rare stamps. A door opens and his brother enters.
What do you want, Ronald?
An old fellow outside wants to see you.
Who is he?
He wouldn't give me his name. He said you'd know who he was if I told you he has... The three-skilling orange error.
He has the three-skilling orange error?
Well, don't ask me for an explanation. He wouldn't give me any.
For your information, Ronald, the three-skilling orange error is a Swedish stamp. The only one known to exist is owned by an ex-king who would be a most unlikely visitor to this office. Your man outside is a nut. Get rid of him.
But the old chap acted perfectly sane.
I said get rid of him.
Very well.
Oh, wait, Ronald. Can't you learn the least thing about a secretary's duties?
I've done something wrong again.
You've just wasted my time, Ronald. Look, I've had to support you most of your life, and mine. When my son Horace was taken ill, you offered to take over his job. But you've been nothing but a bother. Now, file these letters, and correctly, please. I'm going upstairs and see Horace.
He's gone out for a walk.
Why, the doctor told him to stay in bed. Oh, that young fool. If he has a relapse when I need him, I'll see if he's gone out. Answer that telephone and say that I'm out.
Wait.
I'm expecting a call from my son, Arthur. If it's him on the wire, say I'll have that check for him this afternoon and not to bother me about it before then.
What check?
Oh, he'll know about it. Pick up that telephone. I'm going up to the back stairs.
Robert Hyden's office. His secretary speaking.
Well, you're learning, Uncle Ronald. Soon you'll be a better secretary than I am.
Oh, it's you, Horace.
Mm-hmm. Is Dad there?
He just went upstairs to raise the dickens if he found you out of bed.
Well, I'm down in Market Square. I walked all the way here and I feel fine.
Oh, your dad won't like it.
Does he ever like anything I do or you do? The only member of the family who ever gets a decent word out of him is my little brother Arthur. Is he around now?
No, but your father's expecting him, I think, to pick up a check.
Another check for the fair-haired boy, huh? But I want extra money. The old man tells me to live on the salary he pays me.
Well, now, Horace, your father tries to be...
Uncle Ronald!
What?
Come here! Someone, help!
What was that, Uncle?
Your brother, Arthur, he's yelling. Hold the wire, Horace.
Uncle Ronald!
What's wrong, Arthur?
I just came into the outer office, and I found that man. Look at him.
Good.
Arthur, Ronald, what's going on here? Who is that?
That's the stranger who wanted to see you, Robert, the man who gave me that message.
There's a knife in his throat. I found him slumped in the chair like that.
Is he dead? Yes, Arthur, the man's dead. Looks like suicide.
What's your verdict, Doctor?
This man did not commit suicide, Captain Logan.
I told you this was a murder, pal.
Shut up, Casey. Go on, Doc.
The knife entered the old fellow's neck at an impossible angle for self-infliction.
Oh, it seems I never get an easy one. The people in this house say they never saw the guy until this morning. They have no idea who he is or why he came here. Can we have the knife now, Doc?
Yes, I'm finished.
Muller, dust it for fingerprints. All right. And you, Sergeant, make a thorough search of the body.
Yes, sir.
Can I interview the people who found the body now, Captain?
You've already interviewed him, Miss Williams, and Casey got their pictures.
You sent him upstairs before we could finish our job.
That's all we know.
It's all I know so far. We heard exactly the same story from Robert Hyden, his brother, and his two sons.
No prints on the knife, Captain.
That's just swell. Did you find anything on the body, Sergeant?
Looks to me like the killer went through the guy's pockets, Captain.
And how about identifying marks in his clothing?
No labels, no laundry marks to help us either. The guy must have had a wife who washed his clothes, or he did it himself.
He doesn't look to me like a fellow who'd do his own laundry.
Why?
Well, look at his face. You can tell he was a nervous, sensitive, artistic type, Logan. His kind go dirty before they'll do boresome jobs like washing clothes. Yeah, this guy had an interesting face, Annie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a nice face.
At a time like this, you talk about an interesting face? Sergeant, ask the Hydens to come downstairs, all of them. I want to talk to him again.
Right, Captain.
You think one of them may have been the killer, Captain?
Miss Williams, how can I think anything yet about this case?
I merely ask.
Hyden has quite a fancy setup in this big old house, hasn't he?
He's many times a millionaire.
Did he make his dough in the rare stamp business, Logan?
No, in the stock market. I understand he made a big killing there and sorted the proceeds away, quit speculating, and made a business out of what had been his...
I've heard that he's recognized as one of the world's greatest authorities on philately.
On what, Annie?
Philately. It means stamp collecting.
Oh.
You wish to ask us further questions, Captain?
Yes, Mr. Hyden. Come in, all of you.
Well, I'm sure there's nothing any of us can tell you.
This lower floor of your house is devoted entirely to your business, Mr. Hyden?
Yes, it's kept separate from my living quarters. My clients enter this reception room directly from the street as they'd enter a shop. My private office is in there, and my secretary has a room off that door.
Your son has acted as your secretary?
My eldest son, Horace, until several weeks ago when he was taken ill. Since then, my brother has attempted the work.
Very clumsily, I'm afraid.
Of course, you might have trained Arthur to take my place, Dad.
I have no head for business, Horace.
You simply have no head, Art.
No, look,
that's
here.
Enough, boys.
But I...
Mr. Ronald, you say this stranger gave you the impression that his message about the... three-skilling orange error would mean something to your brother?
Mr. Casey,
the stranger couldn't have given such an impression. He didn't know me, and I didn't know him.
My question was addressed to Ronald, Mr. Hyden.
Well, I did believe the stranger knew you, Robert. He seemed so confident that you'd see him.
You're a fool.
Now, Mr. Hyden, you left your private office shortly after you received the stranger's message.
Yes.
You didn't come into this reception room, then?
No. I went directly up the back stairs, and I didn't come down until I heard my son Arthur yelling for help. I thought something was happening to him.
Arthur?
Yes, Captain?
You said you walked in here from the street and saw the dead man.
That's right. I've never seen a fellow just stabbed himself. It seemed all I could do was yell for help.
At that time, Horace, you were talking to your uncle over the phone, huh?
Yes, Mr. Casey. I'd called Dad's office from a booth in the Market Square drugstore. I held the wire while Uncle Ronald went to learn the reason for Arthur's yells, and when he came back on the wire and told me the reason, well, I naturally flagged a cab and hurried home.
You reached here before we cops did, Mr. Horace.
Yes, you policemen certainly took your time in getting here.
Well, if you'd correctly reported the stranger's death, we'd have come here faster, Mr. Hyden.
What do you mean?
You said the man had committed suicide, but we found a murder.
What? Murder?
That man didn't kill himself?
He did not kill himself.
Well, but then... who killed him?
And why?
That's something I think one of you four men can tell me.
Now he's thinking, Annie.
Yes, Casey. And I wonder where it'll get him.
Just a minute, Mr. Nestor Camp. I'm fixing up your order.
You say Logan got nowheres with them Hydens, huh, Casey?
No, nowhere at all, Ethelbert. They haven't changed their stories a bit.
And the victim's identity has to be known before Captain Logan can hope to prove that one of the Hydens or anybody had reason to kill him.
Logan lost his sense of values on this one, Annie. Showed his hand too soon.
There's no new clue to the stranger's identity, huh?
Nope.
That makes things really tough. You think any one of them Hydens could have done it except the one who was telephoning from Market Square?
I don't know. And we won't know anything about this stranger until... You know, that guy's face haunts me, Annie.
No, it's the kind of a face that you don't forget.
Yeah. If the paper had print that close-up I took of him,
Yeah, somebody would be sure to identify it.
Why won't they print it?
Well, did you ever see a close-up of a guy with a fresh knife wound in his throat?
No.
Well, you won't in any family newspaper, Ethelbert. Too many customers wouldn't like it.
Well, I'm a customer, and I wouldn't object.
Well, all right, pal. You asked for it. Here's the picture I took of the dead stranger.
Oh.
You see?
Yeah. Hey, that dead guy is Mr. Carfora.
What?
He lives in my neighborhood, Casey.
Where?
Well, who was he?
Where? What was he?
Oh, Mr. Carfora owns a little old house on Bay Street just back of the lumber yard. He and my sister Edna sent their clothes to the same wash lady. And she says he'd done some kind of work in his house, but she didn't know what.
Annie, we're going to that house on Bay Street right now.
First, I'm going to kiss Ethelbert.
Blue Note Cafe, Ethelbert speak. Oh. Oh, it was Williams.
That must be the place, Casey.
Yeah. It is the place, kid. It's the only house in the back of the lumber yard.
Well, it's so dark, I can't see whether that's lumber piled back there or what.
Wait a minute, I got a flashlight here.
We should have phoned Captain Logan to join us.
We'll let that lug in on this after our exclusive is in the bag. Come on, Annie.
You're going to break into the house?
Not break in, exactly. I'm kind of handy at opening doors without causing any damage.
Well, I hope we can find something in there that establishes a motive for Carfora's killing.
I have a hunch we will find something.
Casey!
Explosion!
It was in Carfora's home.
Hey, look, the place is on fire.
That man!
He's running from the house. You stay there, Annie.
Casey, come back here!
After I get a good look at that...
He's shooting at you! Your flashlight!
Shot it right out of my hand. That was foolish, mister. You got no target now. Another miss, fella. Try again. Now, that gun flash gave me a target. Now I've got you.
Casey! Casey, where are you? I can't see. Answer me, Casey! Answer me!
This morning, when your alarm clock rang, did you wake up with...
Cigarette hangover.
That stale, musty, smoked-out taste in your mouth.
Cigarette hangover.
That tight, dry, uncomfortable feeling in your throat. That's what takes the joy out of smoking. And when that happens to you, it's time to change to Philip Morris. Remember, Philip Morris is the one, the only cigarette proved definitely less irritating... Definitely milder than any other leading brand. That fact is recognized by eminent medical authorities. No other cigarette can make that statement. Remember, top-ranking doctors, eminent nose and throat specialists, actually suggest Philip Morris in cases of irritation due to smoking. That's why we say, if you're tired of cigarette hangover, join the millions and change to Philip Morris. You too will discover in Philip Morris a milder smoke. A fresher, cleaner smoke than you've ever known before. Yes, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today. Philip Morris, America's finest cigarette. And now back to Casey, crime photographer.
You're okay, Annie?
Yeah, I didn't really black out, Casey. The wallop I got was just a glancing blow.
A welt on my head the size of...
Don't sit up. Sit still for a while. Don't try to move.
We got to get away from here, kid. That burning house is throwing out too much heat.
And smoke. Somebody's turned in a fire alarm. Yeah, the trucks are coming.
I hear them. And it'll be too late to salvage much from that little shack. Any evidence we might have found there is ashes by now.
The man who shot at us and slugged us set that fire.
Sure did. Annie, we may find out something more.
What have you picked up?
A gun. A hot revolver with an empty cylinder.
Oh, that man dropped it after he hit us with it.
And it might tell us who he is.
Let's get it to Captain Logan.
Wait a minute, Annie. Wait. The firemen will be on the job in a minute. They'll cool off that little house in a hurry. I want to see what's in the ashes.
Oh.
You say this guy Carfora was an engraver, Casey?
Well, that had been his trade, Logan, but the guy was essentially a hobbyist. And among other things, he went in for chemistry and photography. Annie and I saw the remains of some swell equipment in the ruins of his home.
Yeah, we checked our findings there with neighbors who'd known him, Captain. Nobody knew him really well, but we're told that his main interest was philately.
Yeah. Huh?
Stamp collecting, dumbbell.
Oh, stamp collecting. Well, anybody knows that.
Yeah, well, get the connection, though. Carfora was an absolute bug on stamps. He bought them constantly and is supposed to have owned some very rare books on the subject.
His collection apparently was destroyed by the fire.
And that fire was no accident, pal. It was set by the guy who slugged Ann and me.
Have you any idea why?
Captain Logan.
Yes, Sergeant?
I just got the report on the gun Casey found, sir.
Oh, good.
Swell.
Well, let's have it.
A permit for a revolver of this make and serial number was issued 6 months ago to Arthur Hyden.
Arthur?
Well, that's the youngest son and his father's favorite.
Arthur's the one who discovered Carforo's body. Sergeant, issue an order for the arrest of Arthur Hyden.
Wait a minute, Logan, will you? Before any arrests are made, before anyone's told about that gun or our identification of the stranger, let's have a talk with Robert Hyden.
The old man. Yeah. He could have used his kid's gun tonight. He's the big stamp man, and stamps are the link with Carfora. All right, let's have a talk with Robert Hyden.
This is an imposition, Captain. Well, why should I open my office to you at this time of night?
Because it affords more privacy than your living rooms upstairs, Mr. Hyden.
And we'd like to have privacy.
For more idiotic questions about the death of that unknown man, Mr. Casey?
We'll try to keep our questions a little short of idiotic.
You haven't up to now. Citizens must cooperate with the police, I suppose. Please step into my office. Ladies first, Miss Williams.
Thanks.
Now, what can I tell you that I haven't already told you before?
First, Mr. Hyden, what business did you do with Angelo Carfora?
Angelo Carfora?
Mm-hmm.
Is the name familiar?
Well, of course it is. I never forget a client, or at least not a client who gave me cause to remember him, as this Carfora did.
Well, Casey, we didn't expect him to admit,
no.
Well, tell us about Carfora.
Well, he did business with me for a long time, buying only seconds, stamps that are damaged in one way or another and worth only a fraction of normal value. But quite frequently, he submitted undamaged stamps for my opinion as to their genuineness. I found all of them to be forgeries, except the last one he sent, which was a perfect postmaster provisional. Oh, his business meant little to me in a monetary way, but he had a feeling for stamps, and I enjoyed his interesting letters. I never met the man personally, but...
You never met him?
No. Why do you ask me about Carfora? I thought you were only concerned about that murder.
Angelo Carfora was killed in your reception room this morning.
What?
He was the stranger.
This is incredible.
How long since you heard from Carfora?
At least a year, maybe 2 years. Why was he killed in my place?
Mr. Hyden, have you bought some very rare stamps in the last year or so? Stamps you paid a lot for?
Yes. Less than a month ago, I was lucky enough to get a Mauritius Twopenny Blue. Several weeks before that, I acquired a ninepence lilac brown of Ceylon, and... but you don't know about stamps. These are among the blue chips of philately. I paid a high price for them, but they were perfect specimens.
So who did you buy them from?
Well, I've made all my best buys lately through the...
That gunshot.
Slug got Hyden in the chest.
Fired from that doorway.
And then the door slammed shut.
It's locked now. Lend me some of your weight, Casey.
Right. That opened it.
Miss Williams, see what you can do for Hyden while we...
Help me! Help
him! Logan! I see. Break, you two. Break!
This gun was on the floor beside him, Logan. A hot gun.
It's Arthur's gun, Captain. I knocked it from his hand.
You gave me no chance to explain, Uncle Ronald.
You can explain now, Mr. Arthur. Both this gat and the one you dropped at Carfora's place tonight.
But I don't know what...
I heard a shot. What's happened here?
Horace, your brother Arthur...
has shot his father.
Arthur? No, I didn't...
Captain Logan, I'm afraid nothing can be done for Hyden. He's dead.
Arthur Hyden, I'm placing you under arrest for murder.
No.
Hold it, Logan.
What?
Let's get this picture straight before you arrest
me. Picture straight enough, Mr. Casey. I caught Arthur with the gun in his hand.
But I didn't shoot him. I just picked up that gun when Uncle Ronald grabbed me.
Just picked it up?
Yes. I just come into this hall, through the street door in the back. And then I heard a shot and loud voices in Dad's office. I ran this way and I saw the gun on the carpet. Without thinking,
I picked it up, and just then...
Is that the best story you can think of, Arthur?
Oh, but it's true. Horace, I swear it's true.
Whereabouts in the hall were you, Mr. Ronald, when you saw Arthur with that gun?
At the foot of the back stairs. I was on the floor above, and when I heard that shot, I came down 3 steps at a time.
The shot brought you to, Horace?
Yes, down the front stairs.
Now, you were the first on the scene, Arthur. Did you see whoever dropped that gun?
No, he'd gotten away before
This is nonsense. Nobody dropped that gun, and nobody got away.
My brother is the killer, Captain.
Sure, Casey, it's his play.
I don't agree.
Why not?
Because Hayden was killed to cover up the murder of Carfora. And Arthur doesn't fit the Carfora picture as I see it now.
Look, Casey, Arthur discovered Carfora's body. You were slugged with Arthur's gun outside Carfora's house. And now Mr. Arthur Hayden is found with the murder gun in his hand a few seconds after his father's been bumped off. What more do you want?
A probable link to Carfora.
But I don't understand.
Arthur, you got a check from your father today, didn't you?
Yes.
How big was it? What was it for?
It was $2,000. I owed a gambling debt.
Again?
Okay, Horace, okay. I'm no good. Dad was always paying out money to get me out of trouble. The old man was my friend, as well as my father.
As my brother's favorite son, Arthur, will inherit most of Robert's estate.
But I never even thought of that.
If you did, you never needed Carfora.
But who is this Carfora?
The name isn't familiar to you, Mr. Ronald?
No.
How about you, Horace?
I never heard the name until you mentioned it.
You're a liar.
I beg your pardon?
How long were you your father's secretary?
About 10 years.
During those 10 years, like any confidential secretary, you opened your boss's mail, read it, and took his dictation when he answered it, didn't you?
Yes,
but you never heard the name of Carfora?
Hey, what is this?
You know what it is. Your father made you work while your brother was allowed to play. You hated both of them for that. You never had enough money. And through Carfora, you saw a way to make big money.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. You played both your father and Carfora for suckers. It was easy to keep apart while you were on the job as secretary. But when you were taken sick and your uncle was put in your place, you foresaw trouble. You could think of only one way to avoid it. You knew Carfora would come to the office this morning. So you got out of bed against orders to be ready for him. When your uncle left the reception room to deliver that message about the Swedish stamp, you killed Carfora.
Are you crazy? I was a mile away in a drugstore on Market Square when Carfora was killed. I talked to Uncle Ronald from a phone booth there.
Yes, he did, Mr. Casey.
How many phones are there in this big house, Mr. Ronald? Lines, I mean, not extensions.
Why, three.
You used one of those two other lines to call the office line, Horace. You were nowhere near Market Square.
You can't prove that.
You know about the dermal nitrate test?
Dermal nitrate?
It'll show that you fired a gun tonight.
You're not going to send me to the chair?
Logan,
drop that knife, Horace.
No, no, let me kill my father.
You don't read any easy way out. Here. Casey, hang on to this knife while I slip the handcuffs on him.
Okay, pal.
Why did you do it, Horace?
You've always had all the luck, Arthur. I've always been the fall guy. I was a fool to think I could change things.
But, Mr. Casey, I don't quite understand. Why did Horace kill my brother, and what was there between him and this man, Carfora?
I don't get it either, Casey.
And neither do I.
Well, I'll tell all of you what Horace is going to put in his full confession after I take a lot of pictures.
We'll join our friends at the Blue Note in just a moment. But first...
It's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to wake up fresh with no cigarette hangover.
Yes, that's something more and more smokers who have changed to Philip Morris are discovering every day. Millions of new smokers now enjoying in Philip Morris a milder smoke, a fresher, cleaner smoke than they've ever known before.
And for a good reason. For in Philip Morris, they enjoy the one cigarette proved definitely less irritating, definitely milder than any other leading brand. Yes, it's actually suggested by top-ranking doctors, eminent nose and throat specialists, in cases of irritation due to smoking.
Doesn't it make good sense for you, too, to try Philip Morris? Yes, join the millions and see what a difference it makes, what a pleasure it is to smoke America's finest cigarette. Next time you step up to a cigarette counter, call for Philip Morris. And remember, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today.
Did Casey call a turn on Horace's full confession in advance, Miss Williams?
Pretty nearly, Ethelbert.
Well, what was the car for a setup, and how'd you know?
It was all very simple. Huh? To a mastermind.
Huh.
Carfora was a bug on philately. Stamps, that is, to you, Annie.
Mm-hmm.
He was a skilled engraver who had a lot of fine chemical and photographic equipment, and somebody wanted to destroy the place where he lived and worked.
All of which didn't mean much to your mastermind until our talk with Robert Hyde.
No, he supplied missing parts of the puzzle. Carfora, you see, through the mails, had bought a lot of rare stamps that were in reach of his pocketbook because they were damaged. He'd sent Hyden a lot of undamaged stamps for appraisal. In Hyden's expert opinion, all were forgeries except the last.
Which told the great Casey that Carfora had been trying to make perfect stamps by copying damaged ones and had finally succeeded.
You mean he was a stamp counterfeiter?
Yeah, that's right. But he didn't try to pass his counterfeits off as a genuine article, though. He wanted to sell them for what they were, perfect copies. But Horace was hit with a big idea. He made a deal with Carfora, and an exclusive secret deal, but in his father's name.
And then stamps for which he paid Carfora only a few dollars, he sold to his father and other collectors for thousands.
Gee, what a racket.
And like all crooked rackets, it couldn't last. Carfora called to see old man Hyden, which would have exposed the whole setup, of course, so Horace had to kill Carfora. Then he removed all identification from the little guy.
Which gave him time, as he thought, to set fire to Caffaro's house and then destroy all the evidence of his counterfeiting activities before the police could see the evidence and smell a rat.
Then Horace shot his old man to keep us from smelling the same rat.
And tried to frame his brother for both jobs. Nice guy.
Charming person.
Annie, it's lunchtime. Would you like to put on the feed bag with a really charming person?
Meaning, of course.
Oh, of course, but the great Casey.
Are you paying, or do we go Dutch, or must I lend you 10 until payday?
Now, that's a nice question.
Well, it's a fair one. Like all the masterminds of my acquaintance, you're usually broke.
Well, as a matter of fact, tonight I am.
No wonder.
What do you mean?
Well, he's been associating with stamp collectors all day.
What's that got to do with it?
Philately. Don't you get it? He's philately broke.
Oh, Ethel.
Friends, remember this. If you're tired of cigarette hangover, call for the one cigarette that gives you a milder, fresher, cleaner smoke. Yes, from now on... Good night, Johnny. See you next Thursday, same time, same station, when Philip Morris again will present another exciting adventure of Casey, Crime Photographer, starring Stotz Cotsworth. Until then... Smoke a pipe? You get real solace, comfort, and pleasure from Revelation Pipe Tobacco. Plus, smooth burning. Plus, a swell aroma. Revelation Pipe Tobacco is a revelation in smoking pleasure. Only 15 cents. Try Revelation. Crime Photographer is produced and directed by John Dietz. It is written by Alonzo Dean Cole and is based on the fictional character of Flash Gun Casey, created by George Harmon Cox. Original music by Cy Fewer, and the program features Jan Minor as Anne and John Gibson as Ethelbert. Herman Chittison is the Blue Note pianist. This is Ken Roberts saying goodnight for Philip Morris, America's finest cigarette. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for Case Closed this week. You can find more from Dragnet, Casey, Crime Photographer, and everything else, Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Past episodes of this show, all the other shows, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button is there as well if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.